Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer, creator of We Are Not Sam. Take a deep dive with me as I chat with global visionaries in conversations that uncover inconvenient truths, but also shine a light on how to be healthy, safe, and human in a technology-obsessed world. Let's get started. Welcome to episode 14 of the We Know Show with my special guest for you today, Daniel DeBorn. Daniel DeBorn is an internationally recognized expert in EMF radiation, EMF shielding, and EMF-related health issues, with a special focus on the effects of exposure from mobile devices such as laptops, tablets, and cell phones. Daniel's concerns regarding the health impacts of EMF emissions grew from over 30 years of engineering experience in the telecommunications industry, where he held a variety of executive positions at SAIC, Telcordia, AT&T, and Bell Labs. He is the co-author of Radiation Nation, The Fallout of Modern Technology, and the CEO of Defender Shield, offering EMF radiation protection solutions. Welcome to the show, Daniel DeBorn.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited about talking to your audience. Again, thank you.
Wonderful. Now, I'd like to start off by you telling us about your experience working in the telco industry and what you uncovered.
My steep history is in the telecom space. I worked for Bell Labs literally when cell phones were being created. So I started fairly long ago, and my role in Bell Labs and subsequently in the other telecommunications companies were to define the standards with specifications and then look at the technologies that were going to be deployed in the networks. And I would test them to see how compliant they were to the standards we created. So my staff, my teams did this kind of work for years and years, and we were considered the experts in the industry with the role we played. My experiences evolved, and when I got into my 50s, I retired actually fairly young, and it turns out my adult sons were visiting me, and they had their laptops and their laps. And they said that they had it on for several hours at a time. And my wife, who's a social worker, said to me, "That can't be good for them. I want grandchildren." And of course, she was referring to the RF signals coming out of a laptop and the extremely low frequency stuff coming out of a laptop. And that suggesting that could be dangerous. And I said, absolutely not. The power levels are too low. And, you know, there can't be an influence to the cell. I've been doing this for a long time, and I don't believe it would be possible that you could have that kind of potential dangers to the body. It turns out that I sort of thought about it a tiny bit, and I hadn't done that before. And I began thinking to myself, well, maybe there is potentially some exposures that could be potentially dangerous. So I and my sons started looking and investigating on the medical side, what kind of study work exists that could sort of clarify or deny the problems associated with it. Believe it or not, back then, we knew that after about 3 or 4 hours worth of exposure, the male sperm was immobile, 25% immobile. So there was an impact to the sperm of the male. What I also found at the time, that there was a 2% impact to females with those kinds of exposures. And most of them were non-tumorous, non-cancerous. There were tumors, but a very small percentage of that became cancerous. So I was like stunned that that kind of limited power level and limited exposure levels could have that kind of impact to a cell. And so that's how I started in the electromagnetic space, because I had a very strong engineering background in the space, and I was on the research side as well. So I could sort of span in all the domains in the space. And as time went on, we became more and more the experts in the industry, and we're trying to help educate those as well as create products that help them defend themselves. So that's how I got started.
Oh, I love this. You know, there are, I think it was over, it was over 2,000 independent research studies concerning biological effects of wireless radiation. I understand a large portion of, you know, your research investigates the impact EMF plays on human health. What do you think has been the most alarming piece of research that you've come across when it comes to the harmful effects of EMF?
I'm not sure you're asking this question, but I'm going to tell you an answer that may be important. When the standards were created in the telecom space for the US anyway, and I think it's also true for Australia and Europe, they began looking at the thermal impact. And the thermal impact was for, in the US, a standard that was created after using military 6-foot males. And they looked at the data related to that, and they found that a 1.6 watts per kilogram signal could penetrate the skull of a male, that 6-foot male on the average, by 1 to 2 inches, and increase it by 1 to 2 degrees. And so that's where the maximum power level was created over 30 years ago. The real interesting observation to me was when I looked into the, investigated all the studies that exist, we're not so worried about the thermal. It's the biological impacts to the body that really is the most challenging for the human body. And after exposures over time, it may get worse and worse. What that really means is, you know, when I was in Bell Labs, there were mainframe computers that were 100 feet away from me. They had all sorts of power being emitted from it. And today I have it in my cell phone. Mm-hmm. All the power of that mainframe is in my cell phone and in my pocket. All of a sudden, all this stuff started getting closer and closer and closer to us. And I began realizing that from the study work that was going on the medical side, that there seemed to be more and more evidence that there could be exposures that could be dangerous to the human body. And as you gained in exposure, there's more likelihood of more damage to the cell of the body. You know, you mentioned something about kids versus adults. That 6-foot male penetrates 1 to 2 inch. 6-year-old child using a cell phone goes completely through their head. Completely through. And I used a cell phone when it began years ago, but none of my friends had it because they couldn't afford one. And so very few of us had cell phones that we were using until very recently. But your children, very different. They're using it to call their grandmas when they're 6-year-old. And so it's becoming more and more of a part of our lives. And we have to know what it is about it that is good for us and where there's potential dangers to us.
That's right. I mean, the name of our campaign is called We Are Not Sam, because the name of the dummy they test on is a specific anthropomorphic mannequin, aka Sam. And interestingly, they use a spacer when they measure him so that the phone is actually not directly touching his plastic head.
Exactly. It's exponentially different measurements when you have one, when you have a SAM and there's a distance of just a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a substantial implication to that little distance. So you're right. When you put it to your head, that's at this point the maximum potential dangers to the human body. And that is not even how they tested it.
That's right.
They tested it with the distance.
And also putting it directly on your body. So not just against your head, which is what many people associate with mobile phones. It's actually also in the pocket, in the back pocket, in the front pocket, in the breast pocket. So all of these areas where the phone is touching your body, the compliance section of the user guides is actually suggesting a distance because of the fact that SAM, the dummy they use to test mobile phones for safety, is measured at a distance. And also, I want to just circle back to what you said about the military recruits. So they took the top 10% of military recruits and said that's our ideal mobile phone user. Well, you know, the 6'2" tall adult male that's 100 kilograms and a 5 kilo head, which is what they base him on, is only indicative of 3% of the world's population that fit that.
Right, exactly.
Right? So at very best, let's just take away the fact that this is a non-biological test that's on a dummy, on a plastic inanimate object. The fact is they only ever catered safety to 3% of the world's population. So it doesn't take into account women, children, or the elderly. And that is giving phones and iPads and so forth to children when there's not a single biological test of safety.
Oh, absolutely the case. That is no doubt. And that was sort of the point I was making, is that a standard 6 foot male military person is not your average user. It may have been 30 years ago, which I don't believe then, but it's not today. And they only worried about thermal, not biological. The story is biological is much more substantially concerning to the human body than thermal will ever be. I'll give you an example. We were talking about all parts of the body. There's no question about it. Soft body tissue is probably more susceptible. Well, no one ever died of cancer of the hand because of bone penetration of a cell phone. It's the soft tissue that we worry about that is most at risk. It is your head. It's your breasts. It's your groin area. It's your stomach. And we'll talk a little bit about some of that stuff later on. But here's a quick story. When I wrote Radiation Nation, I talked about a young girl, 12 years old, taking a cell phone, put it in their back pocket. I'm jumping on a message you were giving before. And I said in the book, there's a potential influence to this, the egg cells, and can mutate the cell. I had a friend of mine, Dr. Prasad, probably in the US, he was the most premier X-ray expert in the country. And he's a brilliant, brilliant man. And I had him read my book, and he said, "Oh, that can't be true, Dan." And I said, "Well, you know, there's a distance of less than a foot. And that would mean there's at least a higher level of emissions to that cell that are still in the danger zone. And that is a potential that's real." And then about 3 or 4 years later, he called me up and he said a young woman came into his clinic and she was pregnant and a high-tech lady. And she had all this electronics around her. She had a child and it was stillborn with several mutated cells that he couldn't describe how they got it. And he said, "You know, I can only point my finger towards the argument you ran, which is when I was really, really close to the womb of the cell with the cell phone in the back pocket, that could have influenced." That was actually reinforced within San Diego several years ago. They had women in the first trimester that were they were monitoring the RF levels in their environment, and then at the conclusion of the study, what they found was they were 3 times more likely to have a miscarriage at high RF exposure levels. So there was another case in which there was some data that suggested that there could be a implication to a close proximity to an RF signal to the soft tissue of the human body, particularly a woman having a child. So the problem with these kinds of things is it's not statistically significant. So a lot of us in the industry can't conclude that it is really a definitive problem with high confidence levels because the populations are too small. But there's been an awful lot of anecdotal studies. And if you look at the metadata, the data of all those individuals, and you combine it and look at it at a higher level, there seems to be a good indication there may be these kinds of exposures that could be endangering the human body.
Mm. And I mean, the court system rules in favor usually of the industries because it's innocent until proven guilty, yeah. And guilty can take decades, as we've seen with asbestos, tobacco. And I guess, for me, it really comes down to the way in which they safety test, because if they would have tested for biological safety, and I'd like for you to get into biological safety and what that would look like, because most people have no barometer for what the comparison or the contrast is, then we would potentially be using far, far more safe technology than we are now. And if the regulatory bodies were helping parents and schools self-regulate, we would be in a very different position than the addiction that we're seeing far, far more now with kids, and particularly with younger kids. So could you speak to us more about what a biological effect and a biological safety test, I should say, what would that look like if that was done in a way that could measure for safety?
You and I were chatting a little bit before we started the podcast about your husband being electro hypersensitive. Yeah. That is literally a biological response to RF exposures. The RF Wi-Fi signal, the Bluetooth signal, the cell tower signal, all of these are Wi-Fi transmitting signals, and they potentially can influence the cell of the body. And so electromagnetic radiation is symptomatic of exposure. We have a fairly reasonable amount of study work that shows that there has been some documentation of exposures that have created symptoms of the body. And believe it or not, it's about 20% of our population. There's been study data that shows about 20%. And of that, 80% are women. And we don't really know why. Science doesn't really know why women are more affected than men. Canary in the coal mine, whatever may you want to call it, we know that it's exposures. But these kinds of electromagnetic exposures can be extreme to the extent where you have an electromagnetic radiation exposure, hypersensitivity, but it can be in the form of neurological impacts, psychological impacts, tingling. Your eyes may hurt. You may have tendonitis, insomnia. There's stress, burning sensations. Oftentimes when I work with clinics, I talk about the when you have concussion, the concussion-like symptoms or flu-like symptoms. So you don't even know that you have symptoms from an exposure. But if you're standing next to a Wi-Fi router, that could be part of the problem. And so becoming aware of the symptoms you have and the associations that can exist actually can help you improve those, or at least minimize them to some extent.
Yeah, and interestingly, there's what's called finite difference time domain, FDTD, and it's an algorithm. It's widely accepted. It's a computer simulation method for specific absorption rate, which is what they check with mobile phones for safety. But this method actually adapts really well to tissue models, which are derived from MRIs or CT scans. And this actual model is available for testing rather than a plastic dummy called Sam, but the industry choose to ignore it. So I am wondering why after 30 years they're still getting away with testing for safety on a plastic dummy.
You know, that's a great question because there seems to be history of a lot of things like that. For example, when you smoke, when I smoked cigarettes when I was 12 years old, I tried them out. I wanted to be a big man, right? 50 years ago, which is over that, is 60 years ago, science knew that there was a direct link between smoking cigarettes and lung cancer. We didn't know. And it took 50 years before in the US, you know, they were cigarette manufacturers are required to say this is dangerous to your health. Trans fats, there was a lowly biochemist over 30 years ago that said, it's not the eggs that are killing you, it's the trans fats that are killing you that you have the CRISPR and fries in. It took over 30 years for that to be recognized as a serious problem. And so if you think about those kinds of models of what has been introduced in our environment and how long it takes to deal with it, I think that may be true for telecom as well. With the wireless telephone networks, we're almost in the embryonic stage. We don't have very, very long histories. And so we have the skeptics that wonder if it's true or not, if it helps or not, but it takes them a long time to get there. Independent laboratory studies, as you may know, seem to indicate there are problems. It's the industry-focused studies that typically don't. And you have a very powerful contingency that influences legislation and all sorts of different things. And so it's going to take some time, and it's not unlikely because that's what it's done and typically in many other kinds of toxic space that have existed. So in the meantime, if you need to learn more about it and think about it in your own life and what you may want to do about it.
Absolutely agree. So I think this is a great segue to talk about small cells and 5G. And, you know, we're going to get into that a little bit. And I think it's really, you know, I love what Dr. Martin Paul says. He says, you know, he was a professor of biochemistry and medical science at Washington University. And he said that putting in, now I've got to make sure I've got this right, but putting in tens of millions of 5G antenna without a single biological test of safety has got to be about the stupidest idea anyone has had in the history of the world. I'd love to know what you say to that.
He has a very strong position about what his study work is. He's the one actually, I personally applaud his work. He talks about the cell breakdown with the calcium channel penetration and nitrite oxide builds out within the cell and it mutates or DNA damages the cell. What I like to point out about that is the kind of problems that we have in the biochemistry space is far beyond the cell mutation. It's not just the cancer that he's leading towards in his study work. It is really the implication to the human body, like your husband with electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Those are more chronic. What I haven't talked about is children in the classroom. They have Wi-Fis and they have transmitters and they're all in the classroom. They're exposed to orders of magnitude times 10 kinds of RF exposures that haven't existed in our lifetime. And that has been correlated to some of the behavioral issues that are occurring in the classroom with these kinds of exposures. That, in a sense, is far more concerning than a cell breakdown that causes cancer. It's very, very low probabilities of that. Mm-hmm. Another point about Dr. Powell, he talked about, remember I talked about the cell in the back pocket and it's mutated? He thinks within 3 years, three generations, we won't be able to reproduce because of that fact. He doesn't know statistics. Statistics suggest that not all females are going to put a cell phone in their back pocket. So I'm not sure it's quite as drastic as he's saying it, But it's certainly true that the foundational message is legitimate. There could be dangers, and you got to be careful about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And with the 5G, which is he's referring to, most of 5G that's been deployed today is lower than the RF signals, frequency rates of the RF signals today. They're under 1 gigahertz. So those kinds of things we have a pretty good understanding of. It's when it starts getting into the higher rates, which are, as you were pointing out, in the small cell sites, that it becomes potentially more concerning. And those deployments are occurring. They're recurring in the in the business spaces, as well as the private residents. And those 5G signals are at rates. The RF that's been around us all these years is less than 10 gigahertz. For the audience, 1 gigahertz is 1 billion cycles per second. 10 gigahertz is 10 billion cycles per second. Well, when you start talking about small cell sites, you're talking about 20 billion cycles per second, 20 gigahertz, up to, in the U.S., 90 gigahertz. But it can go up to 300 gigahertz in the 5G space. And so that's what he's referring to, is that there's these new transmitted signals that are coming into the marketplace, and they could be potentially have a different, maybe more critical impact into the human body. Let's talk a little bit about, it's not just the frequency rate that that you worry about, which his concern was. You're worried about when you have when you use your cell phone and you connect to a tower, you're using one RF transmission to reach that tower. And the tower is using one transmission to meet your cell phone. And so typically it's 900 megahertz, 900 megahertz, kilohertz, excuse me. And it connects using that transmission. When you use 5G cell sites, the 20 gigahertz signal can't go very far. In fact, it can today, using the technology they have, can go up to 750 feet. I don't remember how much linear. It's about 750 feet. And it turns out that to get there, they're using two transmitters. Those two transmitters have two antenna that are converging the power at the one point. That one point could be your Wi-Fi, it could be your TV, it can be your cell phone in your hand, in your head. And so that convergence, what they refer to as beaming, is actually two transmitted power signals that are being transmitted. And so it's not just the RF signal that is different, it's also the transmission. Multiple transmissions occurring to get the data from one place to the other. So there are technology advances to enable us to do very high broadband services to the home, but there's also technologies being used that we don't have any knowledge about. We really don't have any study. Although, I'll tell you about one thing. One thing we haven't talked about is when you talk about RF signals, you talk about what it does to you. When you have it to your head, there's a couple of things going on. Your blood-brain barrier is diminished when you're using that cell phone. So your brain, in a sense, is more potentially endangered, particularly the frontal lobe because of the soft tissue in the frontal lobe. But it's also true that it suppresses immune. When you have an RF signal close like that, your immune system is suppressed. Ali Johansson, I love the guy. He's been in this business for quite a number of years, and he read my book as well. And he talks about the mechanics of breakdown in the microbiome and all the things related to a body responding to an RF signal. And with the 5G, there has been a couple of studies, not statistically significant, but there have been a couple about immune response at 20 gigahertz. The bugs like it. One of the problems with RF signal exposures is there's high levels of DevC, which is a biome within the gut. Higher elevations is not necessarily good, and it's been associated with RF signals. It turns out at 20 gigahertz, the bugs love that as well. So we know that there seems to be similar, if not more extreme, response by the body at these higher rates. But none of us really know enough, nor has there been study enough for us to really understand the impact. And that's where Dr. Powell's correct. We don't really know what's happening because no one's done any study work on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know. That's right. But we do know where this technology wants to go. You know, they definitely want more things with microchips and antennas that this technology can read. And for that to happen, they need it in closer proximity to us and our things. And data is the data is the new gold. And we know this now. And most people aren't, you know, shy to admit.
Yeah, yeah. Remember with 6G, it's 900 gigahertz. It's almost a terahertz. That is the X-ray range, you're going from non-ionizing radiation to an ionizing radiation, and that's what's happening, which is known to be more dangerous to the cell. And so you're right. The technology continues to evolve, and there may be some more concerns about these technologies, because one of the things I haven't mentioned was with the 5G transmitter, there's not only two antennas giving you the beaming, the power levels. When you talk about a cell phone, it's 1.6 watts per kilogram, right? That's a cell phone. When you have a tower, it's about 40 watts per kilogram from the tower. And so that small cell site that's in front of your home has to transmit at least 40 watts per kilogram for you to get the signal that distance. So that power level has never been around your home, ever. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of increased power level at a constant load is not really well understood as well. Although there are corollary data which suggests, for example, if you have a heavy user as a cell phone user, which means several hours a day, after 10 years, you're three times more likely to have frontal lobe cancer. And so we know that more heavier use may have a greater impact to the cell than casual use. And we'll talk about casual because that's the way you deal with this stuff. But when it's heavy use, there may be some dangers. At the current levels, there's going to be higher levels when we talk about small cell sites and the technologies that are being deployed for that and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, let's get into the topic of children, because I know this is something that you and I have a very, you know, soft spot for, especially when it comes to technology and safe technology. You were recently quoted in a Forbes interview saying that little children have craniums that are soft and not as dense as an adult. And I'm reading this. While a signal might enter an adult male's skull about 1 to 2 inches, it goes completely through a six-year-old. So the question might be, exactly, what happens to a six-year-old when a cell signal goes entirely through the cranium? Unfortunately, we don't know, because this technology hasn't been around long enough to fully determine the effect and show correlating statistics. Now, putting statistics aside, because one of the things that I'm really focused on, it's a recent interview that I did, and it was titled with Dr. Amanda Follmer, it was titled Questioning the Way, Not the Why. So we can get in, but, you know, there's too many theories, I would say, about why, but questioning the way, when we can see the trajectory of where this is going, to get more technology in schools, more technology in homes, more technology on our streets, et cetera, in our cities, putting all the whys aside, but putting the statistics aside as well, What would be your message to parents, to caregivers, to grandparents, to schools when it comes to EMF mitigation and safeguarding the health of our children?
So it is a soft spot with me. It turns out there's an exposure that's starting at the earliest of ages, and it goes on for a lifetime. And so a statistic, here's a fact. A cell phone is 1.6 watts per kilogram. When you have that kind of exposure over a period of time, as I said, it can be more dangerous depending on load. Did you know it takes 0.1 watt to mutate a cell? There's been studies at the frontal lobe level where 0.1 watts, 15 times less the power level of a typical cell phone, can mutate a cell. So we know that that's true in adults from some data that we've seen. It's not statistically significant, but it's certainly indication that it's a potential problem, that having exposure at the earliest of ages can start impacting the children earlier and with the soft tissue more quickly. And so those are the kinds of concerns. And believe it or not, I'm concerned about the use of technology in the school environment, where it's typically wireless, not wireline. And as a result of that, there's a concentration of RF signal to the young child for very long periods of time. There's been some study that shows the stress levels, concentration levels, and things like that actually are as a result of those exposures, but there's not enough scientific evidence. And that's where precautionary measurements come in. You know, like, you really should think about exposures in any of the environments. And with the school, if you can guide the school systems to go wireline versus wireless, go short periods of time using wireless. There's a lot of things you can actually do to help reduce the potential dangers of a user, and particularly at the child level.
Yeah, I mean, I've visited many schools in my time as a safe tech advocate because I live here in beautiful Byron Bay, and our community is quite aware of these dangers. You know, been speaking to community members, I've been doing the presentations to, you know, parent bodies, and, you know, there is, it does take a lot of convincing and cost for a school to go hardwired and Ethernet cables and basically using, like you said, wired rather than wireless. But I'd like for you to speak into more of that. You know, what is best practice when it comes to utilizing safe tech in our school environments?
You know, exposure duration is a fairly important point. And so I always encourage, if you have to have it, use it for shorter periods of time. If you use a cell phone for 10 minutes on your head and then you put it down, you're never going to have to worry about the impact of that. The duration of time is sort of pretty important to the exposure. So like in school systems, if you want to do the wireless, maybe you can figure a way of scheduling those RF signals in those school environments for shorter periods of time and limit the kind of exposure rather than having it throughout a full day. And that maybe is a compromise to wireline. Wireline is where you literally take a wire from an Ethernet switch and you bring it in, you plug it into the back of a laptop. And then there's literally no RF signal exposure when you do those kinds of things. That's hard to achieve in a school system. But I think limiting time is a smart way of trying to deal with exposures for kids at a younger age.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, when it comes to protecting our children, the industry haven't proven that they are capable of that because they don't test to measure the safety of children. But then how do we trust this industry and these regulatory bodies to create better standards when they have not only suppressed, you know, the truth and the health of millions of children for so long?
So this is where we talked about all the technologies. It took years and years and years and years, regardless of what anybody did. It takes years to try to modify this. Even in the U.S., the FCC lost in a recent court about a year or two ago. And they lost in court because they didn't look at the data. And they were obligated by law to look at the data before they made their decisions. And so that is industry at play. And so remember this, you're the architect of your own destiny. I mean, the reality of it is you can control what you have. And so you should be diligent in knowing your technologies and where they are and the potential exposures you have, and then try to modify your use and of that technology. And you really can do it to the point where it's minimal, if any, danger to the human body, simply by time, duration, distance. If you put a cell phone to your head, it's the danger, most dangerous. If you take it 4 foot away, 98% of the danger is gone to that cell. Simply by putting it away from you a little bit, you get much safer. And so simple little things like pulling away a little bit, turning them off. When you have a cell phone, you have a Wi-Fi signal, Bluetooth, and a cell connection. You have three transmitters in there. I don't use three transmitters. I only use one. Turn the other ones off. You don't need them. So I talk about that as bees in the room. When you can, one bee won't kill you, 1,000 will. So you want to take it and take the RF signal and reduce the number of RF signals in the room, the number of bees in the room, and you become more safe simply by turning stuff off you're not using. Connecting wire to your cell phone, to your TV. You don't need a Wi-Fi signal to the TV and that transmit. You can just turn that stuff off. Take a router, move it back in the garage. You don't need it in the living room. Simply putting it away from you a little bit can really help reduce those exposures that potentially can have danger to you and the young ones in your family. So there's simple things you do. You are the architect of your destiny, and you control. You don't worry about your neighbor because you can't control your neighbor. You don't worry about regulation because you can't control regulation. But there are things you can do that can relatively keep you safe.
Well, I just got goosebumps, Daniel. So I think you've just nailed it. Distance is your friend, and, you know, we've got to empower ourselves to make choices in our own homes and our own communities. I love that message, and I'm very much supportive and an example of that. So I've often said that we need behavior change when it comes to wireless devices and, you know, the constant need for the dopamine hits, which is part of the addiction that's taking place. And we need to be wary of what we consent to. You know, our purchasing behavior is consent. You know, so if we don't want
something,
we don't buy it. That's right. And there are many products on the market, not just, you know, we're not talking about just phones or you know, devices. We're talking about many products on the market that do, in my opinion, seem to put a band-aid on, let's say, a tumor. You know, there are products that sort of mitigate things to a certain degree. And I do believe that we have access to information, to products, to communities, to be able to create a way forward. And we can do that. And we can choose what we use, when we use it, how we use it, where we put it, like you said. And that's why I love that you've created the Defender Shield products. I use them myself, and it does reduce the EMF risks for me because of the air tubes. And these are small steps. I mean, they're right here. So for the people that are watching, these are the ones Daniel's created. He's too humble to promote it, but I'll do it for him. But you've created Defender Shield. You know, it does reduce EMF risks because of the air tubes. But the reason I want you to speak to it is because I'm quite passionate about educating people on the dangers of air tubes versus these, you know, pods that you've created. And so what I'd like you to do is talk about the difference because I think this is a small step, but a giant leap later when people realize they've got to get wireless devices off their bodies. Wearable tech should literally come with warning labels.
Yeah. In fact, I haven't gone through the story about what's the best to worst. The worst is putting it directly against your head, right? And so what's better than that? Putting it in your hand and use a speaker. Everyone's going to hear you. It's much better, but it's also everyone knows what you're talking about. And so then there's the wire from your cell phone to your ear. And that's better because it's reducing the exposure. You don't have the RF signal on your head, but it's not the best. Mm-hmm. The best is where you convert the audio into an acoustical link that links to your earbud, and then there's none. Now I'll correlate to you the story I told you about .1 watts. When you use Bluetooth earbuds, it's .3 watts. It's three times the power level that can mutate a frontal lobe cell, and they're communicating back and forth to the head. Why would you do that? It's more safe to use something that can connect to your ears that doesn't have the power, the RF signal traveling through we eliminated it completely. We took it out of the equation completely by just going acoustical.
Mm-hmm. Great. I mean, I also hardwire. So for those watching, it's an Ethernet cable, as you can see here. But I also tend to hardwire my mobile phone. Is there a way to use the Defender Shields while you're hardwired?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell everyone we're all not going to go into a jet or a rocket and go to the moon to have protection. You know, you got to figure out another way of doing it. And time and distance was what we talked about with Defender Shield. It's all about protecting the human body when it's close to you. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is. And I use my cell phone. You use your cell phone. I'm not going to stop doing that. But I do provide, I don't want everyone to hear my story. So I have a shield between the device and my body. And so it's being prudent about the technology and the use of technology.
Yeah. And one of our mottos is how to stay safe in a tech-obsessed world. And there are many steps that we take. And you're right. That's why I said about small steps but giant leaps later on. It's all about the small
steps. Question about it.
Yeah. And then once
there's no doubt about it. It does not take – you are safe even from your neighbor's transmission if you do certain things within your own environment that you can control. Like, as I said, a cell phone that has three transmitted, turn it to one. When you come in at night, put it in your hallway, not your bedroom. You know, you take the technologies and putting them in space where you're minimizing danger because there's a lot of distance between you and the transmissions. Wi-Fi. I have a little $10 timer, and at night it goes off. And then during the day at 7 o'clock in the morning, it goes back on. So I always have my Wi-Fi, but it's particularly at night, it's not exposing the family to RF signals. So there are simple things you can do that really ultimately make you quite safe.
And I love this because we're talking about digital wellness, which should become far, far more exposed. Let's put exposure on digital wellness, which is great.
I'm telling you. You know, I when we started off, I would get phone calls from a lot of people who were suffering, and I could help them isolate where the problems could be, and help them improve their lifestyle. And it was all about digital wellness at that point. And so I got pretty passionate about trying to find ways of people dealing with the technology, because as I said, we're not going to go to the moon. We got to figure out how to do it, to the extent where we actually started a supplement line for the human body, because there are very specific parts of the body being affected. Like I mentioned, DevC and the biome of it. I have a product that actually goes after the DevC. I have product that goes after the blue eye response to the eye. And premature macular degeneration from the blue light you get from the monitor. And these are very real in our environment. And I didn't see the medical community or the supplement community trying to help that at all. So we actually started a supplement company just to go after the body's exposures and help the body become more resilient to the exposures that they have day to day.
I love that, because we've got scientists that can report on findings in their research. We've got engineers that can create products, and we've got a marketer who can talk about it, which is, you know, like everybody has a role to play in digital wellness. And this is why I think it's such a great conversation, and so happy that we connected. Also, I just want you to touch on the blue light, because I know for a fact that most people, when I get questions, they ask me about the blue light, and not enough people are aware of what this means and what it does to the body.
Okay. So you're in bed at night and you're looking at a laptop or your iPad. And you're staring at it, and then you decide you're going to go to sleep. You put it down, and you can't go to sleep. What's going on? There's a blue light that's in our environment from the sun. And when it's not there, you go to sleep. The clock, the biorhythm of the body sees there's no blue light, and so it goes to sleep. In fact, there's a cryptochrome protein in the back of the eye, which is the switch that turns that on and off. Oh, there's no blue light, so time to sleep. When you look at a monitor, iPad monitor, it's emitting blue light. And so it's not activating the cryptochrome switch protein that you need to get the melatonin started, right? And so that kind of influence is literally legitimate. And it's based on science. And so I talk about not only that, by the way, but I talk about the sanctity of the bedroom. You do not want cell phones or Wi-Fi, anything in the bedroom. It disrupts your sleeping patterns. If it's exposures that are high, you really want to make it clean. I was on a podcast. And I was telling this brilliant woman that you shouldn't have a cell phone. She said, oh, thank you so much for giving me that advice. She didn't believe a word I said. She called me 2 weeks later and she said, my husband and I are sleeping. I said, yeah, because you took the RF signal out of your bedroom and it interferes with the brain. So it really does impact our life and in subtle ways that people don't fully realize.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the fact is we've got to create a sleep sanctuary, particularly for ourselves and our family members, because at the end of the day, why do most people want to sleep with a mobile phone next to their bed? Research shows is because it's an alarm clock for them. So get an old-fashioned alarm clock. You know?
Exactly.
It will still tell you the time. You know, it's not just your phone. Yeah. This little device has become so handy because, you know, you get your emails on it. You can watch some little movie clips on it. You know, everything is so conveniently placed, including your alarm clock, that it's become almost an extra limb of sorts that we feel that we've got to take it to bed with us because it's part of us. And it's not part of us. It's a tool. And we have to treat it as a tool that does not belong in the bedroom.
Yeah. And you know, like the RF signals being transmitted in the bedroom goes through your eye when you're sleeping and it disrupts the brain. So there's a clear path, very undisrupted path to the frontal lobe, and it's disrupting the sleeping pattern. I mean, sometimes these patterns can get so disruptive that you're walking and your brain's asleep and you are sleeping and the brain's awake. The delta versus other patterns are disrupted from the RF signal that's in your bedroom. And so you really just, if you can, you want to move those kinds of things away and see if you have a better sleep. You'll find it helps in so many different ways with the circadian rhythm of the body, which means you don't recover if you don't sleep right. And there's a whole bunch of stuff associated with it.
Absolutely. And I just want you to say that again, even when your eyes are closed.
Oh, yeah. I have an eye mask I created for that very reason, is that because RF signals can go right through the eye and goes direct path to the brain. And so for some, it's been a very effective way of helping them in a more deep sleep pattern, because we've found a way of reducing the exposures that they have. They shouldn't have it in the bedroom. They should be out, but some environments can't filter out enough where it's at levels that are safe.
Well, speaking of having your eyes closed and having a beautiful dream, I'd love for you to speak about, as my final question to you today for our amazing interview, what you dream about in terms of a future for ourselves and for our children and for technology, and how does that look? What does that look like? Tell me.
I can look at it 50 years from now, and it's not going to be a problem at all, because we're going to understand it. We're going to have experience with it, and the human body is going to have years of experience as well. And so the fact that we're exposed to something the human body is responding to, something that's never existed, so it really doesn't know what to do. So stuff is getting inside. Maybe over time, our bodies emerge and sort of beef up their defense systems. And I suspect that some of that's going to happen. There are technologies that can really reduce, if not eliminate, the potential dangers of an RF signal. Very, very, very expensive to do. And that's why it's not in the mainstream today. But I expect some of that's going to start coming into the marketplace in time. And you'll find that we'll be very symbiotic with the technologies around us. But that's 50 years from now.
Well, we might still be around. Who knows? Hey, but at least we played our part.
Maybe you, but not me.
Depends how well this technology plays itself out. But thank you, Daniel, for this amazing interview. It's full of so many insights. And I love your positive outlook and the faith that you have that we can engineer and create a way forward that is in harmony with our bodies and with nature. Because ultimately, you know, everything that we do, we believe is a calling, you know, so to speak, because we do this work because we're called to. And that doesn't come from a device, that comes from the heart. And I can see that the way in which you speak, it's absolutely your calling, the work that you're doing and the heart from where you speak and all the intelligence and your background and your information, your qualification has brought you to this place to do this work. And as part of what we always say on this show is that we thank you for the work that you do and the way that you're paving forward. So thank you again. And I can't wait to see you again on this show later down the track and see how this world is developing and what it is that has been transforming in the times between. But I thank you and I cheer you on. Thanks, Daniel.
You know, and final, most of us work for a living. Very few of us have an avocation. So in your case, you found a passion which is meaningful for not just you, for everyone. So I applaud you.
Thank you, Daniel. And I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
I'm really excited to share this with you, so stay with me on this one. We know the data on EMFs and radiation, and we know that we don't want this technology inside our heads or right next to our brains. I've been using Defender Shield for over a year now, and their EMF-free, radiation-free earbud air tubes are awesome. I'm getting great sound quality without harmful EMF radiation. So many of you have been asking us how you can support our work, and this is our first ever partnership with a brand we really believe in. We invite you to use our link to buy your Defender Shield earbud air tube. The small kickback from purchasing will go towards supporting the We Are Not Sam campaign, continuing to spread the safe technology message, and there's no extra cost to you. Look out for our discount codes and special offers for this product. Even at full retail price, the Defender Shield Earbud Air Tube are around half the cost of Apple AirPods and safer. We are going to continue sharing information with our awakened community on the truth of technology and how to minimize the effects of EMFs and finding safer alternatives. Find the link in the show notes to purchase your Defender Shield Earbud Air Tube. Feel free to share with family and friends. Thanks for listening, and we really appreciate your support. There you have it. Yes, technology does bring a sense of connection, but now you know there is another side behind the marketing curtain. So what can you do? Stay connected with us at wearenotsam.com. You can also find us on Instagram or Telegram at wearenotsam and subscribe to our channel. But most importantly, find your tribe and spread the word. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of The We Know Show. Whilst the We Know Show presenters endeavour to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice. You should always seek the advice from a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the We Know Show podcasts.